Welcome to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. I'm Russ White. At 6 past 4 following news, the state and future of Michigan's robust Christmas tree industry. Celebration details for MSU's 2016 MLK Day celebrations. All about the university's land management office, too. And a conversation with MSU Admissions Director Jim Cotter.
You know, I hear people talk about the fact that these are the golden years at Michigan State. Well, these are very good years at Michigan State, but I like to think of them as the momentum years that we're going to build upon and that our best is still in front of us.
MSU Today begins at 4:06.
Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, each year we feature an interview on Christmas tree purchasing, care, and disposal during the holidays. But what we have not done specifically is talk about the scope and the importance of the Christmas tree industry in the state of Michigan. With the holidays just behind us, it seems like a good time to talk about the industry in broader terms, and with us to do that is Marcia Gray. Marcia is the Executive Director of the Michigan Christmas Tree Association. Marcia, pleasure to meet you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about the Michigan Christmas Tree Association, your members, your goals, and some background.
Sure. The association has been around for more than 50 years, and we really represent growers, people growing Christmas trees in the state. And we have two very different members. We have the large wholesale farms that are really shipping out, just got done shipping just hundreds of thousands of trees all across the country. We also have those cut your own, choose and cut farms that you might be familiar with going out and visiting and enjoying your Saturday going into the holidays. So we have two very different sizes and marketing aspects from our members, yet they're all growing that same product.
Yeah, very familiar. Not only when our girls were growing up, that was a tradition to cut Christmas trees, but now with the grandchildren, that tradition has evolved to the next generation. But the importance of the industry to the state of Michigan, a lot of people might not be aware of just how important it is to Michigan's economy.
Certainly. The Christmas tree industry, Michigan ranks third in production in the nation. Now, we used to be number one, so, you know, there are some challenges there. However, it's an important part of our agricultural community. We harvest between 2 and 2.5 million trees each year now, and most of those are export trees, meaning they go to other states, they leave the state of Michigan. Probably about a $45 million industry wholesale value. The challenge is, unlike most commodities that go to a processing station or a weigh station or packaging or processing those foods and those commodities, Christmas trees, every farm does their own sales, does their own shipping. We just count on them giving us some feedback on their numbers. So there's a lot of estimation in that, but it is a large industry. And what's important about it, like so many other areas of ags, but specifically in our area, we really are providing rural income and rural jobs. The Christmas tree industry in Michigan started and was bigger back in, you know, really got going back in the 50s and 60s is when we came on really strong. We were growing Christmas trees, primarily Scotch pine, on fields and soils that really could not really produce other agricultural commodities. There was nothing else they could really do with that property. So it brought income and it brought jobs to some areas they really weren't going to be able to do anything else with that. So that's really where we started and where our heritage is. Michigan now grows more than 14 different varieties on a wholesale level, more varieties than any other Christmas tree growing region.
you know, driving up north frequently, I go through Wexford County and Cadillac area and what have you. Are those areas still the primary producing areas of the state of Michigan?
Yeah, that's really, Meraki and Wexford County are still are the top producers. So we have that region around the Cadillac area. You know, go on vacation, you see, you know, you were driving, you come over the hill,
now you
see
the trucks,
just
yes.
The, you know, rows and rows of trees. There's also a strong growing region near the Greenville area, and then again down near Allegan. Another interesting thing about Michigan is that we have so many seedling producers. Most states don't have, you know, even Christmas tree growing regions don't necessarily have those people growing those conifer seedlings, and it's a big industry in Michigan.
I'm talking about the importance of the Christmas tree industry in the state of Michigan with Marcia Gray. She's the executive director of the Michigan Christmas Tree Association. Marcia, something fairly new, not new to other commodities, certainly, but maybe new to Michigan Christmas trees, and that's a checkoff program. Tell us about the checkoff program.
Yeah, this has been years and years in the making. The industry nationwide got together and thought, we investigated and decided it made sense to have a promotion order, like milk or beef, the ones you're really familiar with. A lot of people don't realize that mangoes has one, honey,
yeah.
You know, some really smaller commodities. And kind of rallied around this concept. We do now have our promotion order, our checkoff. It took a little political work to make that happen.
And that has to be approved by the Christmas tree growers themselves, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, basically, you get it approved through what we call a... there's an opportunity for you to voice your opinion. And once you go through that process, then you get your checkoff. But every 3 years, the industry votes to keep it or get rid of it. So the industry decides they're going to self-assess 15 cents per every tree harvested and sold. Those monies go and are managed by a board of Christmas tree growers from across the country. We have two Michigan people on that board. They decide how we promote. They decide how we use those dollars for promotion and research. And then again, every 3 years, the industry says, yeah, let's keep it, or it didn't work so well.
And I think it's important for our listeners to know that checkoff, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, it's somewhere around 15 cents a cut tree or something of that nature, is paid not by the consumer of the Christmas tree, but by the growers.
Exactly. Like all other commodity areas, it is paid by the grower, by the producer. You know, people kind of got up in arms. Someone kind of spun this out as a Christmas tree tax a number of years ago, and that's really what stymied it. It's not a tax. It's not something a consumer would pay. You buy milk, you're not paying a tax on it. You buy honey, you're not paying a tax on it. It's just simply somebody spun it out that way and kind of a misnomer.
Now, we're familiar with the other white meat campaign from pork and got milk campaign and some of those others that have been funded by checkoff. In general terms, can you tell us what the Christmas tree promotion, or is that still in the embryonic stages?
It is in the embryonic stages, but I'll tell you two things. First of all, we are interviewing right now our marketing firm. We've got some ad agencies and marketing firms that we are looking at. We've got a number in the hopper, quite a few made proposals. It's a fun product. And so that board will be selecting that group. They will develop the campaign. I will tell you, though, this past season, we hadn't collected a nickel yet. However, we were working with some loaned funds, and some of the growers prepaid their assessments just because they wanted to see something happen. We did a very quick and simple social media campaign, fresh cut, homegrown. We followed families, real families, as they went out to select their tree, sometimes for the very first time ever. Artificial tree users saying, let's give it a shot. We've got beautiful photos. We had a really good following on that campaign. So I have a feeling it's going to go somewhere along.
So some inaugural marketing there, but more to come. So
yeah.
I can only imagine how creative some of these pitches must be from some of these agencies.
Yeah,
when you're talking about Christmas trees, it's got to be unbelievable.
Yes, it's exciting. And I think that's, you know, we realize it's not a big budget. It's a pretty small campaign, but it's such an exciting product and whole world to work in. A lot of agencies were real excited about it.
Marcia, I don't want to neglect the part that we talked to Bert Craig, our good friend, every once in a while, but some of these funds will go to research.
Yes.
And that would be nationally, not just in the state of Michigan. So some of the research areas, I know one big one is looking at some other varieties that may be more suitable for the United States than some of the varieties we may have.
Yeah. There's a group, Bert talked about that quite a bit. There's a group of researchers across the country in these big growing regions, and they are already doing some of that. We're trying to find those varieties that consumers like. They're beautiful, hold their needles well, look good through a long season, and we really need to support those people who are doing that work.
Marsha, we've got about a minute left here, but I'd be remiss if I didn't talk or ask you about the wonderful Trees for Troops program that you're doing every year. I know it's a national program, but give our listeners just a thumbnail of that, because it's fantastic.
Yeah, since 2005, Christmas tree growers from across the country donate at their cost fresh trees to be given to military families. FedEx does all of the shipping. Those trees are distributed at military bases. A handful do go overseas, about 500 trees every year. All the rest stay stateside. Every year we're donating between 16 and 18,000 Christmas trees nationwide. Michigan always donates about 1,000 to 1,200 trees.
That's a wonderful program.
It is.
So a take-home message for our listeners is that the Michigan Christmas tree industry is alive and well and prospering.
It is.
Well, I've been talking Christmas trees and the state of the industry with Marsha Gray, and she is the executive director of the Michigan Christmas Tree Association. Marsha, we'll have you back on the show once you get that marketing program up and going, and maybe we can actually play some radio spots or whatever comes out of the marketing plan.
I think that sounds like a great idea.
Thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. There's more online at mlive.com/environment.
Tune to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Jennifer Orlando.
Looking for a way to kick off 2016? I have an idea for you. How about the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Commemorative Celebration, January 17th and 18th here at MSU? Started in 1980, the Commemorative Celebration features a variety of events in which the MSU and Greater Lansing communities are encouraged to participate. Here to talk about what's planned for the 2016 celebration, its theme, If Not Now, Then When, If Not Us, Then Who, is Ignacio Andrade, Community Outreach Coordinator and Student Liaison at the Office for Inclusion and Intercultural Initiatives. Thank you for joining us, Ignacio.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, Jennifer. I really look forward to communicating with you about what we have planned for.
So could you give us a brief history about the commemorative celebration and the importance of celebrating it?
The commemorative celebration was started back in 1980 here at MSU, so it has a long established history. Even prior to the MLK holiday becoming a national holiday, we were celebrating MLK in that spirit here at MSU, and we've been doing it strong ever since. This year promises to be not only a throwback to some of the early days about what we used to celebrate, where it originated from. It has traditionally grown from that tradition and has elevated to a new level. This year, we are featuring a host of campus activities across campus spanning days, including but not limited to community service projects, a march for justice, student leadership conference, museum exhibits and performances, films and discussions, just a whole list of community-oriented social justice initiatives.
So Project 6050 started in 2014, so it's still kind of going strong. The MLK commemorative celebration is kind of tied into that. Can you explain to us how that works?
Sure. Project 6050, for those that haven't heard of it, I'll give a brief recap, but it celebrates, started last year as a one-year initiative, but it was so successful that the president and the community at large decided that we wanted to take it on for a second year into the future. And so it is designed to commemorate the 60-year anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education, desegregating schools in the U.S. as we know it. And the 50 is celebrating in reference to the 50-year anniversary of the passing of the Civil Rights Act, both watershed moments in our nation's history that are not only strong in their history for advocating for civil rights and advancing civil rights in this country, but also terribly relevant today in our day and time. So what we have started is kind of growing to incorporate not only MSU community, but the larger community. 6050 has had events all across the state of Michigan, over 200 events. Now we're up to almost 300 events, and tens of thousands of people have participated in events. So these events are designed to center around civil rights, human rights, social justice conversations, getting to know who's in your community and how to build relationships with those people. So they're not just strangers. They become part of your community at higher levels than they were before. And so then that allows the conversation to open up about how do we work together to improve our community today in the short term, but also in the long term as well. So Project 6050 is a natural fit with Dr. MLK commemorative celebration. And it looks as though that this year, this is our second year of 6050, but our 36th year of MLK celebrating this community, both look to have a long future in our particular campus community as well.
We're here with Ignacio Andrade. He's the Community Outreach Coordinator and Student Liaison at the Office for Inclusion and Intercultural Initiatives. He's talking to us about the 2016 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Commemorative Celebration, which takes place here on campus January 17th and 18th. So for several years, MSU has hosted a student conference as part of the commemorative celebration, where it's invited current students and high school students to talk about social justice issues, leadership, and so on. So what can we expect from this year's conference, Ignacio?
This year's conference is something a little different than we've done in the past. We've tried a lot of different formats, and this year we are excited about this new format. This new format, it's kind of like a TED Talk, but better, if you will. And better meaning nothing talking bad about a TED Talk. I love TED Talks, but better in the sense of you're going to hear more voices of students in particular that represent our community, talking, discussing issues in a shortened format. So the format is Pachakacha or Pechakucha, depending on who you talk to. But Pachakacha is the style of presentation that is 20 slides each up with a picture image for 20 seconds each. And those are timed. So the slide ends and goes into the next one automatically. So if you're off in your timing, everyone will know. So it is a more concise way of presenting. This is beneficial for our students in developing this skill because no matter where they go after MSU, we know that they will be solid presenters in boardrooms all across the world, all across Michigan, and being able to make those powerful, impactful, short, concise presentations that really have impact on our communities in ways that only Spartans can do, really. I like to think of it in that context. So this year, the Pachakacha style format, we're going to have multiple presenters, and in between each presentation, all focusing on social justice, civil rights, human rights, as the students see it themselves. So it can be left, right, and center. Everyone is welcome. We have a variety of different topics and subjects that are going to be explored. And in between these presentations, we are actually going to engage as a community, the audience, in a discussion about those presentations through the lens of social justice generally. So it's going to be a lot of action, community engagement, powerful, impactful presentations all around subjects that are extremely important and relevant to MSU and really the greater nation and world as we speak about these issues nationally, especially. These are very relevant and timely issues.
Can you give us a little more detail about the conference in terms of, you know, who's invited, when it's happening, where it's happening?
Sure. The conference is Monday, January 18th, and it will be at 9 a.m. is the opening of the registration, and the Center for Service Learning is opening with on-site service projects as well as a community resource fair. And then it is opening once that 9 a.m. rolls by, it continues to flow into a film and discussion, and then the Pachakacha presentations, and then a community march, and then a community dinner. So everybody, these are all events are free and open to the public. The only thing that we ask is that you register in advance in order to secure a spot, both for the MLK Student Leadership Conference, for lunch, and then also for the community dinner for that evening on Monday, January 18th. And the entire community is invited, including students, staff, faculty, and off-campus community as well. Again, free, but you got to sign up as soon as possible to get yourself a spot. The event is taking place Monday, January 18th at the MSU Union, and the website to register is www.inclusion.msu.edu. It's open to all community members, and it's free.
Wonderful. So it sounds like a lot of events, you know, of course, are happening on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which is that Monday, January 18th. But there are a couple of other events happening on Sunday, January 17th. Can you talk to us a little bit about what the community and the campus can expect on the 17th?
On the 17th, Sunday, January 17th, there are two shows, one at 3 p.m. and one at 7 p.m. This is put on in partnership with the College of Music here at MSU. The location is the Fairchild Theater at the MSU Auditorium. And the theme of this year, well, it always has a title of Jazz, Spirituals, Prayers, and Protests. But this year they have taken on a sub-theme, if you will, dealing with human trafficking. And so there is a 3 o'clock show and a 7 p.m. show. Tickets are free and available, but you just have to go to the website and bring – it'll give you details about that. So music.msu.edu, or you can go to inclusion.msu.edu and get more details about how to get your free tickets.
So another kind of annual event that happens every for the past 11 years, so this will be the 12th one happening on January 18th, is the community dinner, which is taking place at Hubbard Hall. Ignacio mentioned it earlier. And it's really great because it's free, it's open to the community, but this year it's taking on a special new twist. Can you give us some more detail, Ignacio?
This year, the community dinner has a special focus on highlighting for the annual MLK Endowed Scholarship Fund. These awardees will be honored at the dinner, and we will also be raising funds for next year's awardees. Our goal is to raise at least $30,000. So we're hoping that the community can come out and contribute both in person and online. And that information to both register for the dinner as well as contribute to the Student Scholarship Fund is all at inclusion.msu.edu.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the Spartan Podcast, Ignacio.
Thank you for having me. I especially wanted to say thanks to Spartan Podcast and CABS and yourself, Jennifer, for having us and organizing this to help us get the word out about this important community-wide event around a very important individual in our nation's history, Dr. MLK Jr. We look forward to having many more of these commemorative celebrations on this campus and in this community.
That was Ignacio Andrade, Community Outreach Coordinator and Student Liaison at the Office for Inclusion and Intercultural Initiatives. So for a complete list of everything going on during the 36th Annual Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Commemorative Celebration, visit inclusion.msu.edu. And good news, all the events are free for the community to attend unless otherwise noted. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is January 18th. Classes are canceled, but the university remains open. For MSU Today, I'm Jennifer Orlando.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes, inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Michigan State University, as a land-grant institution, manages a lot of property, not only in East Lansing, but all over the state. A person who knows all about this is the director of an office called Michigan State University Land Management Office. He is Chuck Reed, Charles Reed. He is the director. Chuck, welcome to the program.
Kirk, thank you. Nice to be here.
Okay, Land Management Office. That's one office that a lot of our listeners may not be familiar with. In a nutshell, what is it that you guys do?
Well, primarily we're the real estate office for the university. We do sales, purchases, leasing, of which we've got about 220 leases as landlord or tenant, the university does, across the country and state, country, and world. We also have oversight over the 13 off-campus research centers overseen by Agbaugh Research. And we deal with gift properties. People gift properties to the university for various purposes.
People typically think of Michigan State University in terms of an East Lansing campus, and there's a lot going on here. But right. I don't think people have any idea the extent of the property holdings we have. And you mentioned not only around the state of Michigan, but other places as well.
Sure. To give you some perspective, the main campus, including our South Campus Farms, adds up to about 5,200 acres here. We have over 20,000 acres additionally throughout the state of Michigan. And through our gift property program, there's additional properties here and there from coast to coast. And we've got coast to coast and in Florida right now as far as properties we've taken on donation that are for sale. So
folks who want to donate to Michigan State University, some folks give cash, but there is an opportunity for people to give property as well.
People don't think of that, but there is an opportunity to give real property. And we, what our office does is we take a look at the property, take a look at, do the due diligence on the property to see if it's a gift that we can accept. What are the restrictions? You know, we're not in the land preservation business, so we can't keep property forever. But if we can sell the property and use the funds for the program of the donor's wishes, such as scholarship funds or endowments or research programs, that's what we do. We take the property, sell it, and then those funds are used in the research or teaching.
And some of these properties that you decide to have teaching and research programs, you get the property, but then sometimes there's also an endowment that comes along that allows you to manage the property so at no additional cost to the taxpayers.
Sure. We've got a couple of great examples of that where the donors donated the property for a specific need purpose that we had, research and teaching outreach related. And with that, they also donated an amount of cash that went into an endowment that allows us to operate, maintain the property, and in at least a couple of cases, there's still funds left over to do programmatic type functions. So, there's research going on at some of these properties. There's teaching going on. There's outreach through extension, all funded through these endowments that came with the property.
Well, let's talk about a couple of those properties. And I know with all of the properties, sustainability is hugely important. I mean, we preach it at the university. We teach it. We do research on it. But sustainability is front and center. Let's talk first about this gem called Hidden Lake Gardens.
Hidden Lake Gardens, we just came to our, I think, 70th anniversary from when Harry Fee, you might recognize him from Fee Hall. On campus, mm-hmm. But Harry Fee, who was a Lenawee County resident, developed a botanical garden down in the north end of Lenawee County near the small town of Tipton, ran that for a while, decided to donate it to our horticulture department. That became a property that was managed by the University General Botanical Garden, and it's about 750 acres. About 60 or 70 acres is what we call the built part of it that have very, nationally and world-recognized collections. The dwarf conifer collection was donated by an individual by the name of Chubb Harper from Chicago, started collecting dwarf conifers in his backyard and eventually donated the collection to MSU down at Hidden Lake Gardens, and now that covers several acres down there at Hidden Lake Garden. We've got a hosta collection down there. We call it the Hosta Hillside, which is a nationally known collection, and a variety of other perennial and annual type collections. We have a conservatory with three different climates down there, an arid or desert climate. We've got a temperate climate similar to Michigan, and we've got a tropical climate. We just recently renovated our tropical climate down there because the palm tree was getting ready to pop out of the dome. So we had to harvest the palm tree and renovate the tropical dome. So
this is a facility. I mean, we have research going on down there and we have outreach activities. But, I mean, the school groups come to this facility, individuals, families, what have you. I mean, it's open to the public, right?
Absolutely. We've got some researchers from not only MSU but some other institutions also doing research and teaching programs, but we take the position, it's an hour and 10 minutes from the main MSU campus, so we take the position that how can we be a resource in that community down there in Southeast Michigan. So yes, a lot of K through 12 type school groups come for a variety of plant-related education programs down there. We have a variety of festivals throughout the year. We've got a holiday festival coming up that's worth your while. Our person that's in charge of the conservatory does an excellent job of maintaining the plant collections inside the conservatory for winter viewing also. So we have
My guest is Chuck Reed. He's the director of the Michigan State University Land Management Office. Let's go up into the thumb now. You've got a new ag education facility up in the Saginaw County area. Tell us about that.
Yes, recently we moved our sugar beet and edible bean research farm up to just north of Frankenmuth. And we've been developing that over the last 8 years since we moved to that location. One of our final pieces in our original plan was to develop what we call an agricultural education center. That's a center. It's about a $1.1 million facility, about 11,000 square feet. It's mainly going to be a large meeting room for the industry. The funding came from industry through donations from the industry. But in addition to that, it'll be meeting space for our programs related to MSU and MSU Extension. And we really hope to use it as a recruiting tool up in the Thumb area to bring science kids to agriculture. So.
You know, you mentioned this collaboration with industry, and we've talked before about people who donate land and endowments, but there's also this ongoing work that you folks do with a number of different commodity groups and other members of industry to develop facilities like the Saginaw facility.
Sure. The industry collaboration is essential to make a research center work. You need good management on site from our farm manager and what we call our faculty coordinator that helps bring the research and outreach programs to the facility. But also essential is the collaboration and cooperation of the local community and the industry that we serve, anywhere from fruits to nuts to forestry to livestock across the state.
Let's come back to campus and talk about a real popular venue, one that we've featured on this program, but it's the anaerobic digester that's associated with MSU Farms.
Right, right. A few short years ago, we were merely spreading manure out the back door of the barns here. We graduated from that to composting facility, and now we sell compost either in bulk form or is developed as compost pellets for your garden or tomato plants type thing. We advanced from composting to the anaerobic digester. So now through our animal waste, and we also combine that with food waste that we receive locally from the local community that goes into producing gas, which produces electricity right on site that we put back on the grid and essentially powers up to 10 of our facilities on South Campus, electric-wise.
Totally sustainable, and associated with that, too, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the environmental certification. It's been a few months now, maybe it's been about a year, but the Michigan State Farms are now certified through a very important environmental certification process.
That's correct. The MEAT program through the Michigan Department of Agriculture. We essentially have all of our sites on main campus, on our south campus, have been certified now in MEEP, and we're up to around 80% of our off-campus facilities are under that program also. It's the right thing to do. We were doing it already, so it was a simple matter to get certified. So.
Yeah, it's an outstanding program. It's a national model, and it's one even Governor Snyder has endorsed and has encouraged people to get involved in. And Michigan State, as usual, is trying to lead the way. People can always Google the Michigan State University Land Management Office for more information. I've been talking with Charles Reed. He is the director of MSU Land Management Office. Chuck, great having you on the program.
Kirk, it's been a pleasure being here.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. There's more online at mlive.com/environment.
Listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis with MSU Admissions Director Jim Cotter. Here's President Simon.
Well, it's our pleasure to welcome Jim Cotter, who's the Director of Admissions, longtime Spartan, seen many changes along the way in Michigan, as well as Michigan State. So, but I know you're a parent as well of an MSU graduate. So as you reflect on your time as Mark has a couple, a graduate, and one sort of on the way still to go. So as you reflect, what's changed about sort of the admissions game as people talk about it in terms of places like Michigan State in general?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of competition out there right now. By the way, thanks for having me here today. This is going to be fun. But, you know, I think as we look across the country at the thousands of colleges and universities, there's a tremendous amount of competition for the best and the brightest. And one of the things that Michigan State does so very well is stresses the importance of applying what we learn in the classroom outside the classroom, whether it's in research or study abroad or whatever the case might be. So I think the leg up we have oftentimes as we compete against some of the many other fine institutions in the country is the fact that we really can walk the walk of teaching our students and then asking them to take what they've learned and use it in the real world. And I even know with the our son and daughter, who are both MSU alums, perhaps professionally that's been the thing that's assisted them the most in their progress as they've gone about their life's journey.
So what are your advice you're going to give to Mark as he's got one coming up?
Well, I tell you.
Good luck with that one.
Well, and you know, for those high schoolers coming up, I mean, time management continues to be such an important component of student success. So, you know, we tell high school students all the time, be conscious of how you use your time. Time management is critical. But I think the other thing is continuing to develop communication skills and really reach out to all of the resources available. You know, sometimes I think high school students tend to back off that. And we encourage them to take advantage of all the resources that are out there so that when they get to a place like Michigan State, it becomes kind of a pattern and a habit and they can continue it in a much larger world.
In athletics, we have a strategy for recruiting that is Michigan-based, is kind of the Midwest, and then you go nationally and then globally. And I know you do pretty much the same. You're not just sitting in an office stamping approved and denied. It's a process where you really get out and engage across the country and globally on students that are coming to Michigan State and what that profile looks like, what's going to make for great students, helping people along the way with what it takes in order to have the opportunity to come to Michigan State. Talk about that. Maybe that strategy that you would have that would be similar to a recruiting process.
Yeah. You know, I was in China just last week, and the interesting component of the conversation in China probably is such that it isn't so different than it would be in California or Texas or New York. And it's all about rigor. Mm-hmm. It's about how challenged is a student in terms of their academic pursuit and how prepared are they to make that transition from high school to college. But, you know, one of the things with 32 years of admissions experience, I still come back to the fact that...
A youngster.
Yes, just a youngster. Yes, I started at 4 or 5, but it's about relationships. And that's one of the things that Michigan State continues to do so very, very well. You know, I had a chance when I returned from China to talk to Coach D'Antonio for just a moment, and I talked about that great win that they had a couple of weeks ago down in Ann Arbor. And from an admissions perspective, I thought, you know, it's nice to win, but more importantly is how they did it. Yep. They believed in each other till the end. They fought hard until the end. They never gave up. They hung together. They believed in each other. And I think that's what we do at Michigan State, whether it's, you know, on the football field down in Ann Arbor or whether it's in the classroom or the research lab or, you know, folks traveling across the globe to learn. I think the heart and soul of this institution continues to be working together, coming together, and in the end, making a difference in the world, as President Simon tells us so often.
So you, the footprint of Michigan State has changed. Partly it's the demographics of Michigan has declined. But as I remind people, we're still taking the same proportion of the Michigan high school graduates we've always had. There are just fewer of them. But so there is this lot of competition for students within Michigan. So how do you go about as a parent if you were saying here are the three questions you should be asking? What would they be? Because for us, a lot of that's on the website. You can calculate how much it costs. You can do a number of things. That's not true of every institution. So what were the three things that you would tell a parent that they should ask?
Well, I think it's all about fit. I mean, it really is. There's a number of tremendous institutions out there, and although we're a great place for nearly, well, over 50,000 students, we're probably not the place for everywhere. For everyone. So I think what we encourage students to do is to find out where it is that they fit in. Where is it that they're comfortable? Where will they feel a part of things? Because wherever that happens is likely where they ought to be. And so begin to look at the environment and say, is this an environment that will bring the best out in me? This is a large institution, and yet we do a number of things to make it very intimate with our residential programs, with interaction with faculty, with clubs, with organizations. I understand we now have a nationally ranked Quidditch team, if you're a Harry Potter
fan. I've
been
out there with them a few times, actually.
They're an interesting group. They worry me just a little. But the fact of the matter is this really is a place that can provide tremendous opportunities for many, many people. But I think the first question is this a place where you fit in? I think secondly, and maybe it's a tie for first, is are you ready? Because this is an academically competitive environment. And although I like to think of it as being collaborative, sometimes more than competitive, it really is an institution that you need to have a strong academic foundation for. I think the other is, do you want to change the world? You know, I tell students all the time when I meet with them, this is a place where it really is an expectation to come to learn. And then when you leave this campus, when you leave this community, take those lessons with you, and make a difference in the world. And I think this is a place where it's almost an expectation that we're going to do that, that we are going to make the world a better place to live. And not everybody is necessarily interested in doing that. And so I think a parent looking at their student in this college selection process, a search process, would have to say, does it look like a good place for you with all of the opportunities? Secondly, are you ready for it? And thirdly, what are you going to do with it in terms of that education when you're done?
When you're out there and you're talking, I think beyond the boundaries of Michigan, let's say folks that maybe don't really know the core of what we're all about, what are the things that you tell them, this is what you're going to get at Michigan State, this is what's real?
Well, you know, the strategy from a recruitment perspective is to go to places where folks do know who we are, to go where there's a strong alumni base, where there's also a strong connectivity to the university. And a global institution like Michigan State, those places are California, Texas, New York, New Jersey, Illinois, Ohio. The footprint of this institution is quite amazing. So the first thing we realize is it's a very different marketplace today than it was 10 or 15 years ago when we had to talk about who Michigan State really was and who they really are. You know, I think CABS, Heather Swain and her staff have done a great job in terms of branding and letting people know who we are. You know, athletics, as Dr. Simon talks a lot about, the fact that it's a front door, it's a front window. A lot of times people can learn a great deal about the institution by knowing something about our athletic program. And I suppose after that big win over Indiana the other night, there was probably somebody in California who watched it on ESPN2 and went to the website and all of a sudden realized we've got one of the finest supply chain management programs in the nation. So, you know, there are ways that students discover us. But I think the message is simply this is a place where folks work together, they collaborate. You know, I hear people talk about the fact that these are the golden years at Michigan State. Well, these are very good years at Michigan State, but I like to think of them as the momentum years that we're going to build upon and that our best is still in front of us. And I think the undergraduate focus, the chance for undergraduate students to work with faculty, the undergraduate students being involved in critical research, an opportunity to meet students from around the globe, students whose backgrounds are so vastly different than their own that it becomes a learning experience to do nothing more than to sit and have dinner with someone and talk about personal experiences. It really is a great place to grow. Having had two students come through here, I say this often, and this is certainly not a slight to the wonderful lessons they've learned in the classroom, but some of the most important things they learned were things that they learned where they had to problem solve and they had to get along with people outside the classroom. That was such an important part of the learning experience. You know, research tells us that the typical freshman will develop about 200 relationships during the course of their freshman year. The difference about those 200 relationships at a place like Michigan State is they will be tremendously diverse. Those 200 people that you get to know will look very, very different than yourself. And I can't apologize for being passionate about this place. Sometimes when I'm out there promoting it, I have to say, you know, I believe in the place. I believe in the product. And it really is a great place to live and to learn.
It's a great place to really be able to, if you take it the right way as a student, to be able to take those 200 relationships and adapt and really grow into to what it is you want to be versus kind of coming in with that predestined outcome. And I think that's one of the beauties of Michigan State, at least from my personal perspective way back in the 80s, is it afforded me that opportunity to get creative.
You know, one of the things we do really, really well here, and I credit the advisors, and I credit the faculty members, and I credit the administration, it's we help students identify, number one, their strengths.
Mm-hmm.
And once they can identify their strengths, it's very easy to correlate that strength with their passion.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've identified strength and passion, then it's very easy to begin to say, maybe you ought to consider this area of study. You know, when I talk with our athletic recruits, a lot of times I talk about the fact that, you know, what position do you play and why do you play that position? Well, an athlete plays a position because it's what they're good at. It's where their core strengths are. And it's what they get most excited about. And so we do the same thing academically for all of our students. We say, okay, you know, if you're a math student, there's a lot of areas of where math is an important component. If you're interested in psych, you know, there's a lot of majors other than psychology that psych is a critical component, be it advertising or social work or criminal justice. So the opportunities here probably aren't endless, but they're pretty significant.
What's that, you know, I'm the average student, I've got the average score, I'm right on the borderline. What's that piece of advice that your office provides, maybe a student that's going into their senior year in high school that really wants to come to Michigan State and wants to know what's the final piece that's going to help that selection process?
Well, I always tell students, don't wait until that senior year to say I want to make a difference, because, you know, it really is something that's cumulative in terms of the review.
Mm-hmm.
I often tell students and parents alike that the most important year in the college admissions process is the junior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how you perform as a junior will open and close some doors. Basically, the junior year is the last thing that in many cases we'll look at in terms of making an admission decision. We have over 15,000 applications in-house already, probably headed to 36 or 37,000. We've admitted a couple thousand folks. Of those 2,000 or so that have been admitted, they all perform very, very well as a junior. So I tell students the most important year in terms of college admissions, junior year. Now, the senior year, if you're approaching that senior season, if you will, the most important thing you can do is continue to challenge yourself to the greatest extent possible, to pursue rigor. The senior curriculum is very, very important. And so although we won't necessarily see senior grades prior to making an admission decision,
right,
we can note a strong curriculum, and I think that really helps a student.
So don't coast in your senior year.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, you know, the junior year is the most important year for admission. The senior year is the most important in transitioning to the most challenging academic environment you'll ever encounter, that being college. So absolutely. We tell seniors the harder you work as a senior, the better off you're going to be as a freshman. I mean, as my 89-year-old Irish mom tells me, life ain't fair. And seniors are hot shots where they don't make any decisions in the school until they consult them, but the reality is they're going to be freshmen all over again next year. So they start again.
Right.
And so the harder you work as a senior, the better you're going to be as a freshman.
Yeah.
The other thing we like to stress with parents and students alike is, you know, it's not just about what is Michigan State going to do for the individual. It's not just about what is this institution going to do to improve an individual's lot in life. It's what do they bring to the table? How are they going to make us better? You know, we're a world-class institution, but we can get better every day, and every individual who comes here can make us better. And so the question that students need to answer is, how do I do that?
Yeah. What do you bring in?
Yeah. How do you find your place to stand? How do you move this place?
Well, Jim, thanks for your leadership and your free enthusiasm representing Michigan State so well every day.
Well, Dr. Simon, Mr. Hollis, thank you both for your leadership. As I travel across the globe, people talk about the consistency, the collaboration, and really the spirit of togetherness that represents Michigan State University. And I'm quick to say that starts at the top. You guys are doing a great job. Keep up the good work. These are golden years, but golden years are going to go on for a long, long time. We're going to get better and continue to do things really, really well. So it's
momentum
been
years. I like that.
Yes.
I like that. I
yes.
like that phrase, too.
Good to be
no
with you, too.
We're going to borrow
you.
That. Take care.
Take care. Thank
you.
A positive Spartans message from MSU Admissions Director Jim Cotter in that conversation with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director
Director Mark Hollis. To hear an extended version of the conversation, please visit SpartanPodcast.com.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
I'm Scott Westerman from the Michigan State University Alumni Association with another observation from The Spartan Life. Jim Tooman is a world-renowned motivational speaker, philosopher, and personal coach who has touched more than 2 million lives with his powerful message of self-acceptance, tolerance, and hope. So you can imagine my excitement at the prospect of meeting this exceptional Michigan State University alumnus at our Alumni Association Grand Awards celebration. Jim turned out to be just what I expected, a humble guy who was much more interested in talking about me than talking about himself. He was gracious. His remarks were inspiring. He hung around until the last guest had left. And this week, he sent me a thank you note. It's entitled, On This Day, and it's perfect for this week's message. On this day, mend a quarrel. Search out a forgotten friend. Dismiss a suspicion and replace it with trust. Write a letter to someone who misses you. Encourage a youth who has lost faith. Keep a promise. Forget an old grudge. Examine demands on others and vow to reduce them. Fight for a principle. Express your gratitude. Overcome an old fear. Take 2 minutes to appreciate the beauty of nature. Tell someone you love them. Tell them again, and again, and again. Jim concluded this with, thank you for touching my life. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all of these things Jim Tooman suggests are within your reach. Try modeling this behavior for a week and watch what happens. I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Learn more about Spartans Helping Spartans at alumni.msu.edu.
Sundays at 4 o'clock, it's MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. MSU Today is a lively look at MSU-related people, places, events, and attitudes put into focus through conversations by MSU President Simon, Spartans A.D. Hollis, sustainability-focused Dr. Kirk Heinze, and me. MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR. For listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. To hear this show again, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.